This is episode 26 with Bill Genovese and Bronwyn Williams.
Welcome to the Futures Intelligent Leadership Flowcast. This is your host, Tyler Mongan. I am the president of Haku Global. This is a space for globally minded experts to dialogue about the future of leadership with a focus on the key question, how can leadership be more intelligent about futures? From this conversation, innovative wisdom, practical tools, and actionable insights emerge to help future-ready leaders thrive in an uncertain, complex, and exponentially changing world. Let's jump in to the dialogue.
Aloha and welcome to this episode of the Futures Intelligence Leadership Podcast. This is your facilitator and host, Tyler Mongan. Today's co-guests are Bronwyn Williams and Bill Genovese, both returning for their second time on the podcast. So I'm happy to have them here today. Bronwyn is a partner and foresight lead slash trend analyst for fluxtrends.com, and she is the co-founder of Apollo 42, which develops brands for the future. She is the co-author of a recent book titled The Future Starts Now. Bill is a chief technology officer and executive board director for Standard Health Corporation. He's a former VP of corporate strategic research and planning for Huawei in China. He has over 25 years experience in consulting and delivering financial systems management applications and infrastructure. He is also an advisor for Haku Global, and you can learn more about his perspective on risk and risk analysis in a Haku Global Leadership Fireside Chat that we did together. You can find out more at www.hakuglobal.com. In today's dialogue, we explore the role of technology in disabling and building trust, why sentiment analysis might be a good signal for the past, but a poor signal for the future, why leadership needs to move from deterministic thinking to probabilistic thinking to expand their future horizons, the dangers of using viral content to inform foresight, and why we need leadership that has the courage to take risks, especially in deep uncertainty. Let's listen. So thank you, Bronwyn and Bill, for joining me today on this episode. And as always, I want to start with this key question of how can leadership be more intelligent about futures given uncertainty, complexity, and exponential change in the world? And I'd like to start with Bronwyn, if you could answer this from your work and your perspective.
Yeah, I suppose one of the things that I've been looking at a lot over the last couple of months, given what's going on in the world, is this whole concept of trust and leading with trust. So whether you're looking at that from a governmental perspective or from an organizational perspective, if you don't have trust, you really can't be very proactive in your leadership. You're always having to be very, very reactive. And I think looking at how different countries and different organizations have approached the new, much tightened, creative organizational brief that they've had to operate in. And in South Africa, we've had a very, very tight brief within which to operate, in that we've pretty much had a full cessation of most kinds of trade. So most businesses have had to really change what they were doing. And this whole concept of trust really comes back to that, because there's been a huge breakdown between citizens and governments and between employees and employers. And it's not a very healthy situation. There are ways to break through that by being more transparent, more communicative, and just generally actually acting in the best interest of all your stakeholders at the same time. So that'd be a few opening thoughts.
Great. And Bill, from your perspective and your work, how can leaders be more intelligent about futures?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with what Bronwyn said. The challenge that I have, okay, and I've lived and worked all over the world, and I agree with what you said, but it, you know, how much is the trust and the definition of that skewed through different biases in the media as well? Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, that's always been, especially for me being an American in this role in China now, is I'm constantly having to deflect and adjust and get to the true signal, okay, of how people are perceiving trust, okay? And it's shaped and influenced by outside forces that a lot of times are not really grounded in reality, on all sides, you know? So I think that's a challenge for future leaders, intelligent leaders, is you know, how do you get to the true alpha, the signal that is true, and it's not, you know, I'm spending a lot of time recently in context to this on sentiment analysis, okay, and some of my projects and endeavors and predictive analytics for correlated risk. And, you know, the point is on that, I view sentiment analysis as a lagging indicator. Okay, so it's a reaction to the things that may or may not be real. Okay, but it does, on the output of that, it further shapes next events. Okay, so, you know, that's a problem. Okay, there's an information instability issue there that leaders, to get to true trust, have to kind of filter through. So,
Yeah, so with your work, Bronwyn, kind of following up on this, how do you see the role of technology helping or hindering trust?
That's a really interesting question, because one of the things I've been looking at is how technology is essentially destabilizing what truth is, and not just from a contemporary perspective, also from a historical perspective. So when you start getting into things like deep fakes and being able to edit history, it's really quite a big challenge to deal with, because truth becomes something that is relative rather than absolute. And we know there really is absolute truth in many cases, but the way that media has progressed, the way that video footage, whether it be photographs or whether it be writing, it can all be manipulated now. And that means that we're sort of losing our perspective in a historical context. So I like to say we're sort of becoming untethered in time, where you can only react to what's going on in the present, because the past is not absolute anymore. It's not like there's no such thing as historical evidence. And that's hugely challenging if you're a leader trying to progress into the future, because when you become untethered in time, you don't have an orientation between your past and your present. How can you be proactive about going forward into the future when there's nothing to anchor you into what's really going on in the world? It means that we can't learn from our past mistakes. It means that we can't make good predictions, whether we're using models, whether we're using data, or whether we're just trying to make assumptions on a more qualitative type space. But I think it's a huge challenge, and I don't think there's an easy way to fix it. But I do think that the more we look at these issues, the more we acknowledge the fact that truth has become a relative construct, for better or worse, at least once you're able to sort of formulate that mess, we're able to operate within the new dynamics this new chaos brings to the fore.
And how about, Bill, from your perspective, how's technology either supporting trust or challenging it?
I definitely agree with what Bronwyn said. And, you know, I think we're going to be, you know, from the lessons of the past, we're going to still be learning a lot about this and the application of technology, because it's subjected to our own faults and biases. Okay, we're humans creating technology and artificial intelligence that inherently is being programmed based on our thinking and our biases. Okay, and the environments, in many cases, that we were raised up and brought in terms of principles, ethics, politics, economic views, okay? And you know, there's a great article, two really good publications I follow recently a lot, Aeon, A-E-O-N magazine, and Prospect. And there was an article in one of those about this, you know, that if you're having problems with your thinking or bias, then run a diagnostic on it. Okay, from an outside-in view or from potentially another person's perspective. Okay, you know, if you're liberal or conservative and your views, you know, why are you programmed and wired the way that you are? And you think that it may be 100% right. Okay, so that's something a leader needs to be very cognizant of in terms of application of technology. So, I mean, you know, it's a challenge for the leader to take a global view and all of those inputs, and come up with something that's as much as bias-free, that's applicable in as many scenarios as possible. So,
and just follow up on this, Bill, too, you know, because I know you're looking at a lot of technology, quantum computing. How do you see quantum computing also maybe destabilizing truth and trust or supporting it?
I think it's more the latter, okay, because, you know, I like some of the analogies with quantum computing in terms of binary thinking and quantum thinking, okay, and we're definitively back to that article that I referenced. I can't remember the whether it's Aon or Prospect. But it goes into that concept a little bit too, where you have to run a diagnostic on why you keep thinking the same way, which is typically binary one or zero or black and white. Okay, we react and we need to, as human beings, get to an outcome. It may not be the optimal outcome, okay, but it's our, based on how we're wired and programmed, based on past experience and in our communities that we live and work in that are most familiar to us, we're driven in that direction behaviorally. Okay, so quantum thinking is, okay, well, it could be one, zero, or black, white, or it could be gray, or it could be even another color. Okay, and after you run the diagnostic through quantum, you're going to get a more logical outcome, okay, in terms of a probability, okay, based on all input factors. So that's what I kind of, you know, that's really what's got me charged up about quantum. Okay, theoretically anyway. You know, but from an optimization application perspective, that's where quantum is really starting to shine in a number of industries.
So, Bruno, do you have any follow-ups on that?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. I think that shifting from deterministic thinking to probabilistic thinking is probably the only way to deal with chaos. So there is going to be more and more variance in the data that we get. I mean, we can look at what's going on in the world with COVID and the sort of data models that we're looking at there. When you try and extrapolate using a linear model, you end up making assumptions that just don't come to pass. You end up with a large margin of error. So when we are able to start thinking more probabilistically, you're starting to think within a range of options or opportunities. And that's essentially what futures thinking and future studies and foresight really is all about. It's about helping organizations and leaders to work within the dynamics of what is possible, which is a range, it's a spectrum, it's not a single outcome that you're heading towards. So if you're able to start thinking that way, you definitely become more futures resilient, but it's not natural because, as you were saying, you know, we like to think in binary numbers, we like to think in black and white, we like to think in absolute truths, but that's simply no longer really an option for leaders. Life is becoming more complex or more complicated, not because, you know, we're not we're living in change now, we never had change in the past, but simply because there's more people on the planet, there's more dynamics, there's more agents running around that can affect the models that we're trying to base ourselves on. So if we're painting ourselves into corners saying this is what is going to happen or this is what is likely to happen, I think we're missing out on a lot of the opportunities and probably quite a few of the threats too. So if we can start to think within ranges rather than in linear outcomes or binary outcomes, I think we can become a lot more resilient.
Yeah, I like that thinking that, shifting from linear to more probabilistic and realizing that this is one of many possibilities. Let's not put all our eggs in one basket here. And I think in the past it was easier for leaders to just kind of, you know, say this is going to be the outcome, right? And then we're going to build our whole world around that, but that doesn't work anymore. And I'm curious, Bill, from your perspective, with, as Bronwyn kind of hints at, this idea of risk, how can leadership be, you know, better about understanding or managing risk in the future?
Well, it ties back to these themes. Okay. And I was just going to add, you know, to what Bronwyn said, when you adopt a multiple outcome possibility perspective in your thinking, probabilistic in your own personal life. I mean, and this is a big change I'm going through more and more the last couple of years, definitely, and me being where I'm living and working here, you become mentally more healthy. Okay, so I've kind of transformed because I'm not so hung up on, well, this has got to be the option. Okay, this is what's happened in the past. I'm programmed and I expect that's going to be the outcome. Well, no, there could be a range of options that I haven't experienced yet. And then going through the thinking of that and seeing those unfold and how you manage through that is extremely enlightening and positive. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the experience I'm going through. I get charged from it, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't get confused. I don't get distraught or depressed. It's having the opposite effect on me because it's almost like it's self-fulfilling in a way, in a sense that the road kind of opens up to you in terms of multiple options and outcomes that are possible instead of being closed-minded. Now, that segues into your exact question. we've handled risk in a multidimensional, we haven't handled risk in a multidimensional possibilities view. We've only looked at it from certain dynamics that are one dimensional. So what's the impact on the credit markets? How is this going to make credit borrowing more difficult? Okay. Or, the market risk. Okay. Is the market going to tank? Okay. Or market and credit in a limited sense, but then we don't look at operational risk at the same time that we have to balance working from home or not having access in South Africa, for example, to e-commerce. So, these multiple unfolding scenarios have to cater for correlated risk across multiple dimensions, because there's going to be multiple scenarios, and those scenarios in each case are not going to lead down one path to one type of risk.
Yep.
So,
I like this line of thought. I'm curious. I'm going to shift over to Bronwyn, and I'm curious. How much is it safe for a leader to share like this analysis that Bill is kind of talking about? This analysis of like all the possibilities and the risks. How much do they need to share, with the people that are following them, to ensure trust versus like moving towards like distrust?
I think that it's essential as leaders to acknowledge uncertainty, because otherwise it does definitely undermine your trust. If you are sitting and saying, this is what's going to happen, this is what we're going to do, and you're only presenting that one linear viewpoint and you miss that target due to external complicated factors that you have no control over, you lose trust of your followers, of your team, of your organization, because now you've painted yourself into a corner. Whereas if you sort of turn that around and say, this is where we're going, this is the vision that we have, this is where we want to end up, but there are many ways that we could go to get there, and there could be many detours along the way, and we open to new diversions as we try and approach that, and we might actually change that horizon, then you become a much more credible leader. And that's very antithetical to the way business leaders have been taught to behave. You're taught to behave to sort of say, I'm in charge, I know what I'm doing, trust me, follow me. But you can only do that if you are sure that you are actually going where you're going to end up. Because as soon as you paint yourself into a corner, as soon as you define an outcome in very binary terms or in very clear terms, then you're kind of tied to that. You don't have as much flexibility in your strategy if changes come on board, if crises happen, and you can't divert from that path without reducing trust. Whereas if you take your followers, whoever they may be, whether they're employees or citizens or just your family or friends, into this realm of possibility or into the range of possibility of where you can be heading, you can then maintain credibility through uncertainty. And if 2020 has taught us anything, uncertainty is something you have to prepare for, and it has to be part of your actual strategy.
Bill, you have a follow-up on that?
No, I definitely agree. Again, Ron, myself, definitely tracking in a lot of the thinking here for sure. Mm-hmm. We're wired once again behaviorally as leaders too to protect our turf, okay, in binary thinking. What's worked for us in the past has resulted in successes in our lives. And some failures, but ironically, where it's resulted in failures, we haven't looked at those failures, I think, enough comprehensively to say, well, we could have looked at an alternative outcome, okay, based on that. But we're still sometimes programmed to go back to what has worked for us that we know when we're wired behaviorally comfortably with in terms of black and white. And that's the only reference point. Okay, and leaders have a set of followers that have followed them through the years that are their core. Okay. But if you have your core and then you have an emergent set, okay, which are alternative outcomes and futures, it becomes, I think the shifting your thinking becomes more natural and less stressed out, and you become more creative. So, in that regard, you kind of let go. Okay. And life seems to be better. So.
I'm curious. I just want to shift a little bit, but Bronwyn, how do you see? Is it that we can start to use technology to build more trust, even though it's destabilizing truth on one hand? Can it help us build trust?
Yeah, so technology is very double-sided to me. I'm pro-technology in general. I definitely think that we should be using these tools that we have available to us as much as possible. And I think that the double edge there is it's technology can be democratizing, which is a good thing. So if it decentralizes information, makes information flows faster, it can lead to more productivity, to better change, to more collaboration. But at the same time, if when you start talking about things like democratizing truth, then you end up with a problem, because then you end up with sort of lowest common denominator thinking. And that's also the double-sided, double-edged problem with democracy itself, in that, you know, there's one thing, on the one hand, you've got consensus, which is a good thing, and on the other hand, you've got the sort of lowest common denominator mentality, which is where I believe the opportunity for leaders come into play. Because sometimes bias and binary thinking doesn't necessarily have to be an entirely bad thing. If you really want directed progress to happen, you need to have a leader that has a bias towards his own particular goal. That's what leadership really is. And what I've definitely seen from my perspective, someone who's working with corporate and government here in South Africa, people are desperate for leadership and for direction. And that sort of proactive direction almost sort of turns back on what we were talking about earlier and says that you actually have to have someone with opinion, someone with a vision, and someone with a plan that is going to lead forward. And that's the opportunity for leadership that comes out of technology that has perhaps reached a sort of marginal returns to democratization if we start looking at things like truth and consensus.
Yeah, very interesting. It's interesting how that it's kind of what seems like we're saying in general is that, you know, you have to be a leader who's going to accept the fact that they're kind of uncertain about the future, but you're still willing to kind of pick a future, right? That you're maybe biased towards, maybe acknowledging that, and still like seek to get there. Is that what you're saying, kind of, Bronwyn?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying. So there is uncertainty. Nothing is guaranteed. Yeah. But because of that, everyone is feeling that, whether you're a follower, whether you're an employee, whether you're a citizen, everyone feels the sense of uncertainty. And uncertainty is scary. It's not something that's natural to us. Mm-hmm. We want direction. We want naturally to fit into those binary factors. You know, we want to know this is right and this is wrong. And there are a lot of people that are looking for that sort of leadership. And you can paint yourself into a corner quite quickly as a leader and say, well, everything's uncertain, so we don't do anything. And that's the danger. You don't want to sort of submerge yourself into complacency or get stuck in what's this term that I've been using quite a lot lately, is this term of postalgia. That is the hankering after the now, because the future is too uncertain and it's too scary. So we kind of get stuck in these holding patterns, which is anti-progress and not very exciting from a future's perspective. So you need people that are brave enough to actually embrace their own vision and then step forward and actually pull that into being. So I like to say a lot of the future is designed by those who are sort of brave enough to go out there and do it. Most of us are trying to attach ourselves to other people's future visions because the future is so overwhelming when we start to look up from our shoes to this wide open horizon full of chaos and complexity. So there needs to be that balance. You need to understand there is chaos, but you need people that are brave enough to still try forge forward through that. Otherwise, you do just end up in these very sort of depressing, navel-gazing holding patterns, which I think is a very depressing mindset, but it's a mindset that I'm seeing a lot within corporate, particularly in the developed world, the sense of this is as good as it's going to get, let's just hold, let's milk the cash cow, let's not move forward to what comes next. And that's depressing and it's not essential. So the future is wide open, it's uncolonized, it's uncharted, yes, but it also means that it's a source of huge competitive advantage if you're brave enough to actually set out on a particular direction, knowing that you might hit some severe detours along the way, but you have to set out.
Do you have any follow-up on that, Bill?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing is, you know, in terms of, I'm thinking once again back to sentiment analysis and Twitter and the technology and behavior there and how things generally from network effects go viral. You know, but I guess the question is that the truth, okay, and is that the best outcome? And we all know that that's not always the case. So I think how do we tap into herd behavior and behavioral dynamics of people and why certain aspects go viral, okay, in a certain direction, okay, and how we, you know, as leaders and using technology can kind of steer that a little bit or at least acknowledge that, you know, that may not be the best outcome in terms of what's being, you know, influence virally, And there needs to be other aspects to it that are more grounded in either, I don't want to use the word alternative facts, or you know, as somebody from our administration in the U.S. has used, you know, or alternative truths. But you know, it's more or less okay. That's one interesting dynamic, how people are thinking through things and reacting virally to something, but. You know, there's got to be other outcomes that need to be considered, okay, other than just public sentiment or opinion. So,
yeah, that's interesting. It is interesting to think how technology can have like this wave effect, where like an idea can spread really quickly, whether it's true or false. We're seeing that a lot now, right? The idea can have it doesn't really matter, but it has a lot of maybe sentiment behind it, a lot of feeling behind it. Or it's something that people are kind of looking for. It just happens to be at the right place at the right time. And how that affects like a leader's ability to lead, right? It's a variable out there now that they have to really consider. What are your thoughts on that, Bronwyn?
Yeah, so you have to be very brave to be a leader today. So if you want to sort of tap into the democratization of truth concept, there's another concept that follows on very closely to that, this concept of social cooling, and how we all are very mimetic beasts as human beings, and how what social media and the democratization of technology has done has sort of accelerated this behavior of us all trying to mimic each other. And then we get into things like the Overton window and how that's sort of closing, that whole sort of that small narrow band of what is politically acceptable, because everyone wants to sort of agree with everything that everyone else is agreeing with to make sure that they fit in with the group, because the consequences of stepping out of the group today are extreme. You have to be very, very brave to go against a mainstream narrative, even if that narrative is incorrect. The consequences for breaking rank can be extreme from a career perspective, from an economic perspective, from a business perspective. I mean, I'm sure we've all seen this. If you get canceled and you're a small coffee shop owner because you allowed the wrong person through your doors, it can have a huge mental effect on your individual life. So it's sort of, it's encouraging us to sort of settle down to, as I was saying earlier, this lowest common denominator. So people are very afraid to raise their hands above and be a leader. And this is a problem from a progress point of view, from a technology point of view, because when we get to this point where everyone is sort of social cooling and self-censoring and pretending to like what everyone else likes and agree with the ideas that are in the mainstream, that are acceptable to the mainstream narrative, we also get to a point where people are not prepared to take risks. And in order to have progress, whether it be technological progress or business progress or any sort of invention or innovation, requires some sort of taking risk. And that is a challenge from a societal perspective, because it means the progress slows down, but it's also a massive opportunity for leaders. And that requires bravery to actually stand up there and say, actually, perhaps the herd is wrong in this case. Perhaps the majority or democratized idea is not necessarily the best idea. Perhaps there is a better way. And because there are so few people that are willing to actually stand up and actually try something a bit different, it means there's a competitive opportunity there. Because there's an opportunity for leaders. People are desperate for leadership at the moment. They're desperate for someone to stand up and say, actually, let's try going this direction instead. Because people are too afraid to make those choices themselves. They're constantly looking for someone who's brave enough to say or do or walk in the direction that they would secretly like to go, but they're not prepared to do on their own terms. And that's definitely something I've seen at a corporate level and at a societal level from where I'm working, from my perspective, sort of in the middle of the world, because South Africa is somewhere between the developed and the developing world. And I'm very much in the sort of middle class of my society here. So it's just interesting to see how that dynamic is playing out at all levels across the globe and also at a very sort of smaller societal level too. So that'd be some thoughts on democratization of ideas and conversely the opportunity for leaders to actually step up and do something a bit different.
Be a follow-up for that, Bill. Especially I'm interested in this idea of how can leadership get more intelligent about taking smart risks, you know, especially as what Bronwyn's talking about here.
Yeah, and once again, I think, you know, my perspective, I don't know, my instincts always tell me if things are going viral in one direction from the herd, I question the rationality behind it, okay, because there's such a mass of people in a large body that is moving in that direction, and I don't always think and feel that they have the substantiation and evidence to do that, and they're reacting, okay, based on panic or fear. So it goes back to, you know, I'm always looking in the opposite direction as kind of a bit of a skeptic for outliers. Mm-hmm. Okay. Not necessarily going in a completely different direction, you know, but looking at some alternatives. Okay. And to why things go viral and understanding, you know, if they're going viral, okay, and everybody's going in that direction, what's the end game? Okay. Is the end game and the result and the outcome rewarding? Okay. For that risk, for everybody to go in that direction, or are they simply following blindly? Okay. And they don't know what the end game is, but their response and rationale is, well, everybody else is doing it. It must be going in a good direction and outcome. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you know, so I think, you know, as leaders, we need to kind of assess that. Okay. And have a little bit more appetite for risk in the sense that the outcome, okay, may not follow where the herd is going, but there is some concrete evidence that the outcome for an alternative path may result in a bigger and better reward and greater resiliency and efficiency. So,
yeah, any follow-up thoughts, Ronan?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. I think that for many people, when they look ahead to the future, they feel quite defeatist about that. As I was saying earlier, they kind of look at where the probable trajectory is going and they kind of accept that. And it takes a lot of courage, and it's not for everyone, to say, actually, this probable future is not the direction you want to be going in. There are actually a whole lot of other things that you can zoom out, and that's, as we say, you know, future studies, the future cone, you know, like that whole broader perspective. There's a whole range of possibilities and options there. But it takes courage for someone to actually lead into that more unknown space. And definitely what we're seeing at the moment is people are looking for leaders to tell them what to do. So I think that people like ourselves who work in the leadership space probably come with a bias that we think that everyone wants to be a leader and everyone's an independent thinker, but we are very much in the minority there. A lot of people would prefer someone else to actually tell them what to do because it's scary, because the consequences of making the wrong choices are so dramatic. It's nice to have, and it makes a lot of sense actually, to have someone else to blame when things go wrong. And we can definitely see that with the herd, whether you be in social media or mainstream media, how we love to blame our political leaders for things that go wrong. We love to blame celebrity businessmen for things that go wrong. And we're able to blame them, even though we are part of the system that is actually supporting them, that votes for them, that's purchasing their products. So I think this whole thing of looking to absolve responsibility onto someone else is, once again, it's a problem from a societal perspective, but it's an opportunity from a leadership perspective, because there's a gap there and people like to latch onto that. That's the general sort of human psychology, right? This whole thing of us being mimetic beings that want to fit in, that want to submit to some sort of direction that everyone else is moving in, but someone has to actually be pulling that direction. And that's the leadership gap, that's the leadership opportunity. And I think now more than ever, we definitely have a global leadership problem, and we need people that are going to be better leaders than the ones that are currently on offer. Because I don't know about you, but when I look across the world at all the men and women in charge, I'm not sure they're necessarily the best people for the job. So the question becomes, why did they get into those positions of power, and why are there not other alternatives on offer? Why are there not new ideas that are not necessarily so binary, saying either playing for this team or this party or that team and that party, but rather presenting different visions of leadership, different ideas for the future that are not painted into these binaries that we tend to be presented as being the only alternatives for what the future could be. So I'm not sure if that makes sense. Maybe you want to unpack that a bit more.
That's great. Well, I want to be aware of time here, and so I want to wrap up, but I want to give Bill the start, if you want to take a second and just share any final thoughts.
No, very good discussion, and you know, like I said, it helps to crystallize my thinking and revalidate it. Mm-hmm. But you know, once again, I think it's never about absolutes or black and white, and there has to be a little bit of healthy risk appetite. Okay. I mean, anywhere that I've gotten ahead, I think in my career and my life overall has been because of taking some risk. Okay. And not following the herd, not listening to my community and those voices around me, my mother and father. You'll need to edit that out. That's kind of a real play on words, huh? My mother and data.
Yeah. That's in the future.
The previous generation, your parents, they did things a certain way, and that resulted in successes and outcomes for them. That their base reference point is not negative or poor or bad, but it worked for them. But that does not mean it's going to work for you, right? So you're the captain of your own ship. You've got to, you know, take the journey yourself and navigate through multiple outcomes to get where you need to be. And as leaders, we need to do that for our organizations too, and present those stories and options for, you know, the people that are depending on us so that they can see multiple potential outcomes.
Great. Thanks, Bill. And Bronwyn, final thoughts?
I would very much agree. I think that the opportunity here for leadership is to embrace uncertainty and to embrace risk. So to embrace risk on a sort of horizontal level by acting even against the democratized truth, if it's a mainstream narrative that is something that could be improved upon. And then also embracing uncertainty, to embracing the range of possibilities and probabilities of what future outcomes could come into being. So if we're able to sort of accept that uncertainty and that risk, we can have a much more productive future and much more exciting future than the one currently on offer from the most probable trajectory.
Great. And as always, I want to end by asking you to leave this conversation with one word for future intelligent leaders. And Bill, what's your one word?
Oh, this is a tough one. I would say the word that just came into my mind, just popped in my mind, is alternatives.
Alternatives. Thanks. And Bronwyn?
I would say possibilities. Very similar.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Bill and Bronwyn, for your time and your insights and your wisdom. Really appreciate you being on the episode today.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for joining us today on the Flowcast. To get a summary of today's dialogue, find out more about today's guests, listen to previous episodes, or discover more about Haku Global's neuroscience-based Futures Intelligent Leadership programs or customized strategic foresight and innovation sprints, visit us at www.haku.global. At Haku Global, we believe it is time for more Futures Intelligent Leadership. The future is something we need to think more intelligently and feel more deeply about, so we can collaborate to discover today's solutions for future problems. If you are in a leadership role and need support or training to scale futures intelligence across your organization, then contact us at Haku Global. This is your host, Tyler Mongan, and until next time, have a preferred and conscious future. Aloha.